Hey, Dr. Drew here, and this is just a reminder that the discussions here are not a substitute for medical care or medical evaluation. This is purely for entertainment and education. We hope you learn something, but see your doctor, get proper medical care. We need to ask everyone who subscribes to the show, please listen to the podcast when it drops and give us a little discussion about it. It really helps. Also, we want to thank our sponsor, Hydrolite. Go to the banner on DrDrew.com for details. If you click on the DrDrew.com Hydrolite banner, we have a 30% discount for those particular vendors on the Amazon site. I'll tell you more during the break. Support our sponsors so we can bring you more This Life podcast. Well, one of the great parts about working in recovery is seeing former patients successfully move on. And I've had patients that have come up to me years later and shake my hand and say, you know what, sometimes people are kicked out of treatment. And many of these folks move on to become mental health professionals themselves. And of course, the field of psychology is vast. The need for competent practitioners is huge. If you're considering this rewarding career, I urge you to consider the California School of Professional Psychology at Alliant University. Now, I've known them for a long time at Alliant University. I've spoken at their past events. It was founded in 1969. It's boasts an alumni network of nearly 50,000 people worldwide. And Alliant has fostered many of today's mental health pioneers, authors, and advocates. CSPP at Alliant University hosts both on-ground and online programs in business psychology, marriage and family therapy, clinical counseling. They also offer APA-accredited doctoral programs in clinical psychology that can allow for specialization in child psychology, clinical forensic psychology, and integrated psychology. And the faculty is crazy. It's made up of leaders and historical figures like Abraham Maslow, Carl Rogers, Viktor Frankl, some of the true fathers of modern psychology. For more information, and I worked alongside of these students as well, by the way, in the clinical setting, as well as having lectured at the institution. So for more on the California School of Professional Psychology, CSPP, at Alliant, click the Alliant banner on our website or visit Alliant, Alliant.edu, Alliant.edu. Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Okay. All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather around the iPhone once again. It's another episode of This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob Forrest.
Here we are.
Here we are.
So, last couple of weeks, we've been doing shows on Las Vegas.
Las Vegas.
Now, this is on the heels of the Harvey Weinstein.
The thing that knocked Las Vegas off the news cycle.
The Harvey Weinstein, which bothers you greatly.
It really does.
Because?
America's obsessed with sex. Anything that's got that sexual component, they will pay more attention to. You know,
we get off on violence quite a bit. It seems like violence is the other thing we seem to get very interested in.
But anyways, the reason why I wanted to get together with our guests and you and talk about this is everybody wants a solution to things. So now we're going to take this big bad oogie boogie guy down, and then now we're going to be an enlightened society, an enlightened Hollywood. This sort of thing will never happen now. It's all going to be different. I have no faith that that's going to happen.
Right.
Absolutely.
Oh, there's Tani Katane.
There you go.
We've got Tani Katane and Jenny Ketchum with us. Hi, Tani. Hi, Jenny.
Hi.
Hello.
You know, Bob, first of all, hi, Jenny. Nice to see you.
Hi, Tani. Nice to see you.
Of course. And Bob, to your point, I did Drew's show a couple weeks ago, and it was about, we were talking about me taking my implants out. Mm-hmm. And it kind of falls along in the same kind of narrative of women who put these big things. I mean, I'm not against you trying to keep looking like yourself and younger, but to put these enormous big boobs on you so that you can attract men.
Yeah.
You know, it's just another, it goes right with what Bob was just saying.
Well, it's also funny you guys bring that up, Tani, right now, because I was rushing to read as we were getting going here was Mayim Bialik's in the news, you know, from Blossom and from the Big Bang Theory.
Right.
I can't quite figure out what her argument is. She's a very smart woman. And she was saying something along the lines of what you're saying, Tani, which is that women have sort of fetishized themselves. And to some extent, I think she's saying – she was accused of victim blaming. But I think she's saying that women need to be aware of what they're doing when they do stuff like that, I think.
You know what? And even if that – I didn't hear the statement either.
I didn't hear it.
But it's a good statement.
She's being attacked? Is that the thing?
She's being attacked because people accuse her of victim blaming.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have gone through all the hell and the surgery – if I did not 100% believe with her. So bring it on. Attack me if you want to. But it's true. I think I noticed if there were 100 men that used to look at me, only 75 of them now do.
Okay.
By getting rid of these, I dropped 25% of the douchebags out there.
There you go.
So, Jenny, you have your PhD now, right?
You have your doctorate. Yeah, right.
Don't you?
No, I have my master's in social work. The debate had been on whether to get a PhD because I want to be called a doctor or because of it's actually a pragmatic and utilitarian thing for me to have. And anyway, it turns out that at this point, I just want to be called a doctor, which is not a good reason to do anything.
So was it an MSW you got?
Yeah.
MSW.
Yeah,
so, all right. So do you have an opinion on this little topic? Just this piece of the topic we've gotten into so far?
Yeah. I mean, so here's the thing, right? Like this idea that like women should be aware of like the way that we are sexualizing and fetishizing ourselves. I mean, you can't like fish don't know they're in water, right? Like we are part of this broader system that believes that women need X, Y, and Z in order to be valuable and to be found sexy. And so it is one thing to say like, yeah, be aware that you're in that. And to a certain extent, like we don't realize the actions that we're taking while we're taking them, if they are so deeply embedded in our psyche and like who we are that we can't even see it. It's like implicit bias, right? Like,
yeah.
Most people don't understand like the depth of their own racism, especially most white people, which is why it's so hard for us to wrap our heads around like the fact that racism still exists.
All right, so you packed a lot in there. So
yeah.
So, sure so what Tani, I think since we're using you as subject A, what Jenny is saying is that if you were a fish swimming in water, you know, someone asks you how's the water today, you just go, "What's water?" And you somehow this has become more conscious to you what you were doing. How did that happen?
Yeah, I think just you know you trade in great elasticity of your skin for brain cells.
You grew up.
That is the most amazing way I've ever heard of it.
Yeah, I'll buy into that.
And to be fair, if I could jump a few years ahead of you, and then you give up those brain cells again,
yeah,
so, I'm sorry to say.
Well, we're not there yet.
I'm sorry. What did you say, Drew? After I said that,
I said if I could jump a few years ahead of you, I'm giving the brain cells back now that I earned through maturation.
Yeah, but so the subject that I'm interested in, we all know this has gone on, whether it was Harvey Weinstein or it's anybody. Mm-hmm. We all know it goes on. There's a complicitness in the whole system of Hollywood, whether it's in porn or the Academy Award films.
I think Jenny's going to immediately go in society generally, of which society is just a focused version.
But I think the subject is Hollywood, though, right, because it's okay. Harvey Weinstein. Right.
Yeah.
And I don't see any differentiation between the way that men that I know in the porn industry, the porn, you know, big shots act as it's the same way as Harvey Weinstein does, the same way that people in most entertainment. There's so much power in the people that control the industry.
Okay.
It's been on. There is no other industry like it.
Industries
have. See, when you're an actress, you're not an employee.
Yeah.
You're just garbage. You can just be treated however you want.
You're
can be
commodity.
Nice. You're begging to be an employee. It's a horrible system.
You're begging
Hollywood.
To be an independent contractor.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's why the CEOs of Hardee's or Carl's Jr. don't go sexually harassing the line staff at the local restaurant because there are laws and rules to that corporation. There are no laws and rules to Hollywood.
That's
there
true,
aren't.
Because even the companies that you just mentioned, they have their HR department, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who is the HR department for? It's for the company. You know what I mean?
But Drew, follow me. I just think that there's a lot more of this goes on in Hollywood than any other industry because of that component to it.
Right.
Yeah. It's actually one of the biggest reasons of why I got into porn instead of trying to pursue a mainstream acting career. I always thought if I'm going to suck dick to get ahead, then I'm going to do it on the camera where I know I'm going to be paid for my services. And there is no shame about that. And at no point can anybody turn around.
Really
and
take that in, Drew, what she just said.
I'm wondering if you actually had that thought, or that's just in retrospect you're thinking that.
Oh, no, that was like an actual thought. It was sort of the things I've discovered in retrospect are much more about like sort of
motivations
like,
for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And how deeper like patterns from my youth primed me to behave and make these decisions. But in terms of like intentional decision making, it was like, how much money can I make really fast? How can I make sure that nobody at any point says something that I didn't actually, like there's no secrets, right? Like every dick that I sucked was on camera and well documented. And that's what I was being rewarded
but prior,
for.
Prior to that decision, had you had interface with the legitimate or whatever you want to call it, the mainstream entertainment community as an actress aspiring to get a role and been asked for sex?
I was 17 prior to that. Okay. You know, I started in porn when I was 18 doing nude photo shoots. And so even that I knew enough about the entertainment industry, sort of living on the periphery of it, living in the exaggerated world of it, which is basically just the porn industry. I knew enough about the entertainment industry to know that I didn't want to have to, you know, do what many women have had to do to get into positions that they've gotten into.
Tawny was saying something.
No pun intended.
Yeah. There are a lot of us that, I mean, that never crossed my mind, and it never happened to me. I was dealing with legitimate people that were legitimately doing legitimate jobs, and I've talked to you about this before, Drew. Not one time was anybody in my profession groping or trying to get sexual favors out of me for jobs. And now that I'm hearing all these brave women coming forward and telling their stories, I know there has to be more women like me that never happened to. So to put a whole blanket over the industry, Bob, I think there's probably like 10 more people, 20 more people shaking in their boots right now. Mm-hmm. But one of the reasons that I'm on the show today, I think with you, Bob and Drew, and Jenny, of course, who I just met, and you're absolutely lovely, is that, oddly enough, never ever once did anybody try to do that to me.
Yeah, but let me ask a few questions. So no agents ever tried to ask you to dinner?
No. Now, I've had this before in my personal life.
That's what I'm talking about. This is all personal, though. It's a blurring of the lines.
No, without anybody that she worked with.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm talking about like when I was on Newport. Vacation and ran into somebody and they weren't even American or in the industry. So this has happened to me, but it has never happened to me with my SAG card, ever, ever in this business.
Okay. But I just think that a lot of times when you exist in an industry like this, what becomes normal for somebody who's above you in a position of power at an agency that you're managed by or represented by, asking you on a date and the ability to say no. Now, you may not have been in that position, but I know thousands of women who have been in that position. And it's a difficult thing because you don't know whether saying no means you're not going to be at that agency anymore.
Yep.
Well, you know what? I was very lucky. Mm-hmm. I was, my career happened at the stars and moon and everything lined up for me. And I realized that I'm very lucky. And I realized that some of our best actors and actresses are waiting on me, and they could blow me out of the water in terms of acting. I have been very fortunate to never, ever have experienced that. And I see what you're saying. Yes, I have been asked to dinner, but I have a lot of misplaced anger that would not go over well with me at all.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way. And maybe that's the vibe I gave off.
Maybe.
That don't even try. And plus, Bob, I started at such a young age that I had a plethora of worthy IDMB projects that I didn't have to suck anybody off to get a job. Yeah. And absolutely no should anybody look down on anybody for doing whatever you need to do to take care of your family. I totally get that. And I am no judgment at all. And as a matter of fact, I really respect you for coming out and actually talking about it, because it is something that needs to be talked about. But I've been vacillating over the last couple of days. I even said this to Drew yesterday. I mean, should I be like I mean, did people not find me attractive? Did they not think I was cute? Because I never got sexually harassed in any way, shape, or form.
So I think, Jenny, we've hit on something here that women can adopt as a strategy, which is subliminal rage. Just have some rage ready to go, ready at hand.
Yeah, like,
rage ready at hand, and men will kind of hold up.
Like, think twice, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, just carry daggers in your eyes and maybe one or two in your purse. And then all the Weinsteins of the world will know better than to mess with you.
That's true, and I think you're all making a very valid point. And Bob, to your point, is that maybe I had gone to dinner with an agent or a producer or whatever, and they may have thought at the beginning, unbeknownst to me, that this is going to end a certain way, but they didn't know who they were dealing with.
There you go.
Well, let me touch
on that, Drew, because I think that's what happened.
No, of course.
Her.
I think, of course, that's what happened.
Also, but you had some very powerful boyfriends, also.
Husbands, yes. Yeah. Yes, some very powerful, yes.
But so Jenny, how do we balance this concern that we're discussing here against vilifying heterosexual males?
Well, I mean, listen, like, here's the thing, like, males in general are going to be vilified whether they're heterosexual.
That's
well,
the because, age like, that we're living in, Drew.
For the with few exceptions, males are the ones who commit rape, right? Like, it is not, of course, exclusive, but like, in my understanding, like,
no, that's true.
Men are the main perpetrators, whether they're gay or heterosexual. But yeah, this is, I honestly don't know, Drew. I have no idea. This is such a bigger systemic problem that it's just sort of exaggerated.
My hope is, though, I hate the idea that we're creating more victims every time we try to adjust, you know, to one problem, we create more problems. You know what I mean? Is there a way to understand this?
Well, that's what I'm saying is the idea that this is going to wash Hollywood clean and everything's going to be okay is naive. Let's have a dialogue about how do we get there become...
But by the same token, we got millennial males, Jenny, I don't know if you're seeing this clinically.
Not having sex.
Not having sex, afraid to speak with women for fear of being misinterpreted, especially if they have had a beer or a woman has had a beer. They will not speak to them. If it does time to have physical contact, they want a document. They want to sign off.
Yeah,
you know.
Interesting.
And it's really causing these tremendous stunting of people's ability to navigate relationships. And what I'm seeing a lot of is by the time they hit middle young, like 24 to 28, then they do feel like, okay, I'm going to form a relationship. If it doesn't work out, they start stalking. Because they get obsessed, because they can't flexibly navigate relationships. They've not had the experience.
Right.
I mean, yeah, I think that's an extreme.
That's interesting. So, like, clinically, I'm dealing with a lot of techies, and so they're not speaking to women for an entirely different set of reasons.
Yeah,
but you know what? That may contribute to it. And given that I am in Seattle, which is sort of an epicenter of liberal and progressive ideology, I wouldn't see that as too far off. It's challenging because we don't really encourage conversation about this. We do demonize those who are wrong. Like, you know, like in what I said earlier about like white people not understanding their own like power and privilege, like the way to have that conversation isn't to be forceful and isn't to be cruel about it or to be blaming, it's to be kind and compassionate. And so, you know, teaching millennials, teaching kids from a very young age, what it is to have power and what it is to have privilege and what it is not to have power, what it is to have experienced depression is something that can certainly contribute to greater dialogue and a deeper understanding. And at the same time, I think we're going to have to go through a lot of growing pains in order to get there.
But don't you think what's going on in America, where as a parent, you're being forced to have conversations with children that are hearing things at school? Elvis is 7 now. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, why would somebody vote for Trump? Right. And I said, well, mm-hmm. there's lots of different reasons. Some people believe in what he was saying. Some people are angry. And I told him this to bring it back to entitlement, Jenny, is there's a lot of people that aren't as lucky as us, Elvis. We live very, very comfortably, and a lot of people don't. And that frustrates them. And it's frustrating a lot of people in our country right now. And we need to appreciate how wonderful and blessed our lives are. And we need to also understand and listen to people whose lives aren't like that. I had that conversation with him yesterday.
Brilliant. It's brilliant.
And children need to be taught this. Yeah. And I don't think, I think parents are scared to have that conversation. I think a lot of white upper middle class elites are mm-hmm. scared to have those conversations. They tend to want to make everything wonderful and we're all just care about each other all the time and not really discuss why are people so angry.
Tawny?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, you know, if I'm going to be honest with just freaking hippie, I am being sexually harassed by fans of mine on Snapchat.
On Snapchat?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Bob.
How do you even understand Snapchat?
I'm sorry?
I don't even, Drew and I were talking about today, we don't even understand Snapchat.
Like, good for you.
Like, good for you.
I don't get it either.
The problem is, and it didn't even really hit me until just now, but I post a lot on Twitter and Instagram, but I put like more of the truth of my day on Snapchat.
Wow. Okay. Because it'll disappear?
Yeah, well, it'll disappear. It's easy to do. It's a 4-second long, look peep into someone's life, and I'll do multitudes. Well, what happens is I get these messages back, and I learned a long time ago not to look at them because what guys were doing were taking pictures of their genitals, and then I would open up my Snap and just go, oh my God, this is disgusting. So yes, but these aren't people that are in the industry.
Yeah, these are just people.
But it is a great example of why it's easy to vilify males. It's like Jenny's thing. It's like, what is that behavior?
What? Let's just explore so that penis shooting thing.
It's so bizarre.
Has any woman ever opened a file on a phone and looked a penis and gone, oh my God, I have to have that.
I got
to
meet this guy.
This is my man.
But
so disgusting, Drew.
What do they think they're accomplishing?
Well, Jenny's the closest to academia. Is anybody studying this? Jenny?
Oh, okay.
No, I mean, not that I know of, but that doesn't mean that it's not happening. Tawny seems to go.
Oh, I could go through. I won't.
No, thank you.
We don't need to see it.
Show you.
But what is the mentality behind it?
I don't know. It's so weird.
But guys,
it's Peeping Tom stuff.
Is it?
Yeah.
You think it's
It's flasher stuff. It's Peeping Tom stuff. It's just a new mechanism for that. They don't have to walk down the street and do it. And in a world where we've normalized sending dick pics and receiving them and it being like an acceptable form of like introduction.
Hey, listen, Jenny, in California, they're doing it under the age of 18 a lot, and each transmission is a felony. And each reception is a felony.
I've got 75 guys that I could put in jail.
No, for the under 18. Under 18. but you would go to. But if it was a teen who was sending it. If a teen accepting, he would have committed felony trafficking and child porn, but you would have also committed a felony for accepting it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a public figure. Mine isn't closed.
Just saying.
It's the craziest thing ever.
Yeah.
So now we've gone from the hugest sexual harassment story in American history to dick pics. It is. The Harvey Weinstein.
I mean, what was Bill?
Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton was not this magnitude
and Crosby?
Over, over
Bill Cosby.
Cosby.
Yeah. Was, Cosby.
You're talking about Angelina Jolie and Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This is not going to go away.
The president
this
is of the United fucking States.
The president of the United States.
Kind of a big deal.
I don't think it was equal to this. I can tell you. I don't think it was equal to this.
Well, but Jenny's bringing up an interesting point, which is that this has been this magnitude. Maybe this is the biggest. I won't argue with you on that. But this at least this magnitude of scandal has been around now for 15 years. Yeah. At least, and why, and here we are again. Does that mean it's just recalcitrant? Does that mean we're not going to change? I think we are going to change. This one feels like
this is what change looks like.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
But I thought Sandy. Like wait a minute. I thought Sandy Hook was what change looked like, and
it didn't change at all. I thought Sandy Hook was
kindergartens being shot in their classroom wouldn't change America.
No, I said we crossed a line with that and moved into a new phase. With Sandy Hook.
Lots of little changes make a big giant change, right?
That's like, what I was saying
earlier. Civil
rights
movement. Yeah. That was one pretty big change. And here we are, same sort of issues, just sort of a different population and a different.
Why do you think we're so obsessed with sex and violence in America?
Jenny first, then Tawny.
I mean, I don't. Because it's easy, because it's what we sell everything with. Because
why do we sell everything with it, Drew?
Makes money.
Yeah, it's a commodity. Yeah.
Why is it so easily monetized? Why are there 19 war movies about Iraq? I watched Iraq on CNN. I don't need to watch it in a movie.
You don't need war porn?
No, I don't need war porn or murder porn or any of this. And
so boring.
I don't understand why it's so popular. Right.
Well, because we're Puritans. We were based on this like puritanical idea of no sex and like, you know, no taxes. And this is just sort of the exaggeration of that. Like lots of sex. I mean, the tax thing is a different sort of thing, but that's why it's still such a hot button issue.
Is it,
you know?
Like, is it
we're into lots of taxes now too. It's good.
Is it a religious thing? Is
it a religious component? It's Seattle. I just paid my car tabs.
Is it a Jesus thing? Is it a religious component? The naughty, naughty, naughty?
Well, I think No, I think it is. I think there's something there. What Jenny's saying in terms of it's an opposition to our history or an opposition. It's a What do you call? We call you all the time when you're always oppositional defiance. It's sort of an oppositional defiant thing.
Mm-hmm.
On one hand, but on the other, it is emotional regulation. We do such a poor job of developing a regulatory landscape, which requires human relations. We have obfuscated human relations on behalf of commercialism, and this is just what we get. Is then we turn to commercialism to regulate, and this stuff regulates us in through arousal, right? Sound right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're even beginning to so like the internet and like forms of emotional regulation and learning. I mean, people regulate their sexuality through the internet.
Yeah.
That's what, you know, sex addiction is like.
That's right.
Regulating the fact that you feel totally invalidated and lonely with like massive amounts of pornography. And now we're moving into what is it called? A type of therapy where we're using like digital. It's a digital interface, but it's like a
non-human, in artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
I mean, some sort of, it's a different word for that, but yes, fundamentally, and like as a way to help people move through like social anxiety and fear of intimacy, and that's the sort of breakdown that we're moving towards.
Yeah, that's right. And Tawny's giving us a tour of her house. But
yeah, where are we going, Tawny?
Then I'm going to let her answer.
You're so cute, Drew. I, my knee surgery a couple of weeks ago, I was standing that whole time.
Oh, no. No good.
Sit on that.
No good.
And you know what I had to do this morning? I told Susan. So standing for that long was starting to...
No good.
Are you still in the same house in Orange County on the cliffs?
No, sold that.
Okay.
Mindy and her husband, she was an anchor woman. They just sold it for $30 million.
What?
Oh, what?
Yeah, my old house that I built from the ground
what
up.
What did Jenny just say?
She threw up.
Do you want to throw up?
Should have kept it.
Hey,
I'm a social worker, right? Like social work money.
Oh, my God.
$36 an hour. That's
yeah. Well, that there's something to that. That the first responders make hardly anything.
Yeah.
Social workers make hardly anything. Counselors make hardly anything. Teachers make hardly anything. But yeah. Gamblers make millions of dollars. Hotels yeah. make millions of dollars. Equity funds, millions of dollars. Our society is backwards to who we think we are.
Well, mm-hmm. it's been that way for yeah. a long time.
It's not a meritocracy by any chance.
Huh?
No.
It's not based on merit. It's based on these social values that we've built up around us.
Yeah, people spend more money at casinos than they do on therapy, Jenny, and y'all are going to have to get used to it.
Well, that's how they end up in therapy, Bob, and you know it.
Well, we were talking about the guy. I mean, they keep asking if he was mentally ill. The guy gambled 14 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year for two decades. Yes. Is he mentally ill?
Yeah.
Craziness.
Let me get out my DSM.
Yeah. So, but wait, I have optimism. What?
Jenny, what's the kind of baby you're having? Boy or girl?
Boy or girl.
So it's a vaginated human being. So
there you go.
We'll see how she identifies okay. once she comes right. out. But
might be
a little
fluid.
But it's terrifying to think that my little girl, because if I had had a cell phone that took pictures, because I did not when I was in high school, there is no doubt that I would have used that to distribute pictures of myself to at least one or two men that I had been trying to pursue. And that those, they were not men at the time. They were 16-year-old boys, right? Like, I would have used that as a mechanism to get attention and power. And like thinking about raising my daughter in a world where we have to have laws about, you know, kids sending each other dick pics. What am I going to do, Drew?
I don't know. But listen, well, here,
just conversation, open dialogue.
Well, no, you know what? Here, let me propose this, because I was watching Bob's favorite show, which is Teen Mom.
I love it.
And
I'll bet you Jenny's been watching it since she got pregnant.
Bob, are you telling me
she is?
For some reason, when women get pregnant, no matter the level of education, they become obsessed with Teen Mom.
Okay, so
Bob, do you agree with children, with babies having babies?
No.
It's the
well, the kids are the moms are 25 now. And
some of them are 30 now.
No, 26, the oldest.
Oh, okay.
And Kaylin, not Javi. What's the little kid's name? Oh crap! Okay, one of the little kids. It was talking. She, you know, the first father of the three men that had babies with Kaylin, was saying, you know, I think he seems a little sad, depressed, and she's like, he's fine. He talks to me all the time. We talk all the time. And finally, she goes, "What?" She goes, "Are you happy being a, you know, what is there? Are you happy? Would you like something?" And he starts crying, and he goes over to his father, and he starts hugging him. And I thought, and she goes, "What's the problem? We talk all the time." And the dad goes, "I can call you anytime. We can talk on the phone whenever you need to be." He goes, "I just want everybody living together. I live nearby. We talk on the phone." And I thought that was a great example to me. Yeah. Of how we have lost sight of the fact that human children in development to develop landscapes of emotional regulation, what we're talking mm-hmm. about here, mm-hmm. must have proximity to the bodies of their parents.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's body-to-body transmission. Talking is way overdone. Talking is way overvalued. It's just and the child just projected this to the world. He came to hug the dad, and then she goes, "What?" And she hugged him, and then the other little boy hugged the he just wanted the bodily
this on a
close.
New episode?
It was probably about episode 10. I don't know if it's aired yet.
Which show are you talking about?
With Teen Mom.
On Teen Mom.
Teen Moms.
Oh. So. And I thought this somehow somebody said something about talking, or one of you got something about talking. I thought, you know what? Talking way overvalued.
It's not
way overvalued.
Enough. Yep.
It's not proximity. Enough. It's bodies relating. That's
closeness.
Why this wouldn't work for a child development across a Skype or anything or a phone. No.
No.
We've lost track of that.
But you have to start somewhere.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, and whether it's the conversation starts with, "I'm going to take you to the park and talk to you about it," or "look at this situation." But you've got to start. It's got to start somewhere. And our words and our actions speak
Just got to be in the bed. Just got to be there.
Be what?
You just got to be home.
Yeah. Yes. And that's why these all the broken families and stuff, I worry about these kids and the
Me
dads
too.
Are moving away and they don't.
Well,
and
people spend all their time on their cell
to defend us divorced dads for 1 second, there are married dads that are never home.
That are checked out,
yeah. No, they're never home. If you live in Rancho Cucamonga and you work in downtown LA, you've got a 2-hour commute back and forth. That's 4 hours. You work 8.5. It's 12.5 hours. Your kids are going to be asleep when you leave. They're going to be asleep when ready for bed when you get home. And so, you know, we're just all trying to do the best we can. But, yeah, human beings contact.
I'm just saying. That, right. We got to reprioritize that is all I'm saying. I'm not saying you have to be.
Well, Tani did a strange thing. Didn't you, when you got a divorce, you just moved next door?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was a coping strategy.
No, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, we actually continued to date for, you know, a decade after we got divorced.
You're kidding.
And every holiday, you know, every Christmas, we were divorced, but we take the kids to New York for the snow. And
did you know that, too?
I knew he was very involved with the kids.
But they live next door to each other.
Yeah, they live next door. But I'm saying that's a solution. That's fine with me. I have no problem with that. It's no different than being in different beds or different bedrooms or, you know. But to move across town, well, okay, well, now it's something different. But how do we get into this?
We want our daughters to grow up free of sexual harassment, free of objectification, and we have to have dialogues about it. You can't just sweep it under the rug. Oh, it's all going to be better now because Harvey Weinstein's going away or never going to make movies again. You know what I mean? And I have a daughter too, and I wonder. How do you see? I'm a strange person in my philosophy. I think Madonna's girl power, sexual empowerment that I think was very popular with women, that I'm a sexual being and I own my sexuality. I'm empowered and that's what empowers me was maybe it gave you a gain on the one hand and you lost a lot on the other hand.
Well,
do you understand what I'm saying, Jenny?
Yeah, I
understand.
Well, let me propose what Bob's saying different. There was a Williams College student in the 90s wrote a book as part of her thesis, and it turned into a book called A Return to Modesty. And she argued, contrary to what Bob was just saying, the exact opposite of the Madonna thing, which is that holding on, being contained and modest was a way of exerting power. And that's where I wanted to go. And somehow we've got to talk about the topic of power because that's really what's overlying all of this. You know, where is women's power? How do they retain their power?
How did these events happen? The girls had no power. The guy had all the power, right?
Mm-hmm. And which leads us to an entirely different conversation, which I'm sure maybe Jennifer can relate to this, that sometimes us women can be our own worst enemies. A lot of women don't like to see other women succeed.
Oh, there's a lot of that.
That's why there's not a lot of women at the top.
Okay, so that's
true.
Well, no. But her point is well taken, is that women do knock each other down a bit rather than supporting each other.
They do.
Right. So I'll buy into that, but I do not, I like the women, why the reason why women are not at the top is the same reason why we don't have like a lot of people of color who have PhDs, and it's because historically we haven't let people of color into institutions that give them PhDs. Like the people who are making like hiring decisions are deciding against women. So statistically, women are hired on experience and men are hired on potential. And so if two resumes come in that look the exact same and the name is the identifying factor between them, the guy is going to get the gig based on like what he might be able to do for the company versus the woman who's already supposed to have this incredible trajectory. It's like working in hospitals. You have to have worked in a hospital in order to get a hospital job, but you have to have a hospital job in order to work in a hospital.
It's like being an AFTRA.
Yeah.
You can't
get a card unless you've done a TV show, and you can't do a TV show unless you have your AFTRA.
Exactly. Exactly.
But that's changing, though. And who's the head of Facebook? Who's the CEO of Facebook?
His sister.
A woman.
His sister. It's Mark's sister, isn't it?
Huh? No, it's not his sister. but she's also a powerful person at Facebook. Yes. But companies are changing as the new generation of business leaders get younger.
And I'm also a little surprised to hear, Jenny, you talking about academia as being somehow limiting. I mean, my sons are now applying to graduate level programs, and as a white male, there are many programs, that good ones, that they need not apply to because they're white male.
That's right.
So I'm talking about the other way. It is the other way now.
Yeah.
Now. Well, specifically because if you look at all of the professors who are tenured and already in place, there it's a bunch of white dudes, right?
I understand, older white males.
And they'll all die.
Yeah.
Which will be good for like everybody else, but
Oh my gosh. I don't want them to all die. And I mean, Drew.
Everybody else at the school does.
No, she means there'll be a generational shift in the next generation.
Drew, you know what I meant when I said that about women, how we're our own.
No,
worst.
Yes. There's two things occurred to me when you said that, Tawny. One was that women knock each other down and attack each other, and they're starting about age 12. It's intense. I've never seen anything like it. Wait till you have see your daughter go through that, Jenny. And I know Tawny's just been through all that a decade or so ago. Number one. But the other thing is, you women internalize or look inwardly for whatever circumstance they find themselves in, rather than realize. Lauren Savon is a good friend of mine, and she was the number two woman to talk about Harvey Weinstein's behavior. She was the one with the potted plant, right? She was cornered down in a basement in New York City by him, and he masturbated and finished in the plant next to her.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and she is this super bright, super high-powered journalist who doesn't suffer fools gladly, but she was stuck. And, you know, his guy outweighs her by 200 pounds, and she was and she had was trying to figure out what was going on. She said it was just processing. It was impossible. And then she immediately went into, well, what did I do to, you know, how did I cause this?
Yep.
Which is that's what the kind of thing I thought of when Tawny said we were our worst enemies. And then Manette would then ask her later, well, why didn't you just run out of there? Why didn't you kick him? Well, she's like, no, I'm busy trying to figure out and blame myself. By the way, he outweighed me 200 pounds. I was frozen in place. You know, but the point being, women do take on inordinate amount of responsibility for things that really have nothing to do with them.
That's true. Yeah. And Drew, I thought I heard that they were going to like start trying to lift these. I can't believe that there is a statute of limitation.
That's Gloria Allred's trying to limit some of the.
It's very short for sexual harassment in particular. It's very short.
It takes women sometimes. Something happened to me that I was talking. I didn't get into the details with Susan Pinsky. Yeah, but I did tell her that because I knew I was doing the show, so I remembered something, and from like 30 years ago that happened to me, and I was just thinking if I was any other type of person, and I wanted to go after this person, it's like a lady. Sorry. No can do. You should have come to the realization that was what it was 10 years ago. Yeah. And I think
the statute of limitations. Well, let's get back to Jenny's point. The law is made by men for men. And the law, the statute of limitations in California for sexual harassment is 2 years.
Oh, is that right?
It's ridiculous.
Crazy.
It's two years?
Yeah, for sexual harassment.
I had no idea it was that short.
And who made that law? Women? Who were sexually harassed?
You're getting love on. Hey, Dr. Drew. Love you, Dr. Drew. Oh, yeah, everybody on Instagram. I'm going live on Instagram, and everybody loves you.
Instagram.
And Rob, they love you, too.
So they have questions. They love you.
This may be the first time I've seen Jenny in a long time. Yes. Any questions for Jenny?
Probably. Yes. Oh, shucks.
Noelle's on a lot. She said, how about the military? Remember when we heard about all those females being harassed?
Yeah.
It feels like they've taken care of
that's
that.
Right.
I think they do a better job at almost everything than the regular public does.
They don't have to take consensus. They just have fiats. They just go, this is the way it's going to be, and that's the way it is. Yeah.
So here's an interesting thing, Jenny. Tell me what you think. Yeah. I grew up in an era where gay people were hidden away and ashamed, right? Gay men. I grew up in the 60s in Palm Springs. A lot of gay men and rumor and talk and, oh, he owns a hair salon and all kinds of stuff, right? No, not longer shameful to be a gay man in America, nor a lesbian in America. still transgender was strange. It was a different category.
Yeah, yeah.
Through till here recently.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's a
thing.
Acceptable norm. No shame to it. A lot of advancement in the removal of shame for transgender people has been done by Caitlyn Jenner, for sure. Mm-hmm. It's been, right? Mm-hmm. Still a lot of racism, prejudice, whatever you want to say. But in general, the public is more accepting of all these different things that there used to be a lot of shame associated with.
Okay.
But yet there is one category of person that shame has stayed consistent and deep. And
wait, hang on a second. Have we ever discussed this?
No.
Okay, so I'm going to guess. Fat.
Well, that's a new one that's coming, I think.
Yeah, okay.
Drug addict.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Drug addict. People that I counsel who are drug addicts will say, I'm glad I go to AA because the same alcoholic is a lot better. I'm like, then drug addict. And I, you know what I mean? I wonder, when is the alcoholic drug addict shame going to go away? And then the new thing that's going to come is fat shame. Yeah. It's going to grow and grow and grow.
I'm just, I think we have added to shame and stigma in addiction by changing the nomenclature. I'm so strongly against that. You can't use the word addict anymore.
I'm first, a drug addict.
I know. You're a junkie. I know. And you're proud of it.
I'm proud of it.
And Dr. Drew, you're not allowed to what?
There's a new nomenclature. Jenny
knows
this. You
can't say addict. You have to say substance use disorder.
And
substance use disorder. It's the craziest thing I ever heard in my life.
Yeah. But is it? I mean, so the idea is that like the person comes first. So when we categorize people only by addict or alcoholic, that becomes the entirety of their identity.
No, it isn't.
Right?
No, it isn't.
I'm Bob and I'm badass and I'm a drug addict.
And no more than I'm. Right. I'm hypertensive. So what? I'm hypercholesterolemic. So what?
You should be ashamed of yourself.
No, I am. Screw that. I am.
Yes.
Bob's brain is a drug addict.
Oh,
not
for
Bob.
Sure.
Not Bob.
Yeah, no, I'm for sure a drug addict.
There's something about it, though, that is so just multi-generational, decade after decade. Yeah. There's just shame about being a drug addict because it suggests lack of willpower.
Well, and not, because we have real lack of free choice. We can't stand that in this country. But Jenny, did you remember my lecture? I mean, if you probably forget it now, but I tried to reduce stigma and shame by pointing out that addiction is a evolved version of the human.
I know, and that's the biological genetic side. I'm saying all the coolest people are drug addicts.
Yeah.
Jimi Hendrix, John Lennon, Bob Dylan, Dylan Thomas, Raymond Chandler. Just list all the greatest artists in history. They're all drug addicts and alcoholics. Yeah. Why are people not wanting to be like that?
Both of you, Drew and Bob, have done tremendous work to normalize it. I mean, aside from some chat that you gave, Drew, you both participated in a really popular show that put drug addiction and alcoholism on across the face of America and made it accessible to people. Like, we would never think that the people that you brought onto the show had any problems, let alone the most to be shamed problem that there is in this country,
which is
addiction.
Well, how about the courage that they had to go to do that to everyone that was
on the show? It got more and more courageous as time went on. I think the first couple of seasons, the people didn't know what they were getting into.
They didn't understand.
But then by the time you get to season three,
Jenny was one of the most classic version of what you intended to do as opposed to what happened.
Very different. Like,
Tell Bob.
Well, so I mean, when I checked into sex rehab, it was with the intention of becoming more famous because obviously I was a sex addict. I was a porn star. It was like an occupational.
You forget
hazard.
That I rented your apartment and I could never listen. I watched Law and Order in that apartment.
So much.
Dun dun.
Bum, 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 bum.
Do you know the story, Drew?
I do know the story. I had not thought of it in 10 years, but I do know the story.
I would be sitting in there and I would think of her.
No, Bob, you're right. Like, addiction and drug addiction very specifically is still so demonized. I mean, even at the insurance level. So I just recently worked with somebody who was desperate to get into a rehabilitation center, but she needed they wouldn't do a detox from heroin from her.
Jenny, do you understand? We've been dealing with this for 30 years. We have people that need 6 months of treatment. The insurance pay for 3 days.
No, but she's the new thing is they won't authorize.
Listen, they will get away with whatever they can. And what I've always said is that there's no one to advocate for drug addicts.
The problem you have, Jenny, is you got licensed. See, I'm only certified, and I can tell an addict. Didn't you take a lot of benzos also? Weren't you taking benzos? And the guy's like,
"Well, I mean, when I had to go back to sleep after 5 days of being awake, of course I took as many benzos as I could get my hands on."
But I tell the clients, I guide the clients to the statement, the benzos will get, because here's the thing, 9 out of 10 times they are taking benzos and they just don't think it's a real drug. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Totally.
You game the gamers, Bob's saying, is you tell them
junkie move.
You tell them it's not the opiates, it's the benzos they need detox from.
So gosh, if you were taking benzos, you'd get 10 days detox.
So I have a question.
Okay, go ahead.
What do you think about Harvey Weinstein's addiction problem? Do you think he has one?
All right, so let's go around the horn.
It's obvious he does, but that's
let me phrase the question this way. Is he a drug addict? Is he a sex addict? A bad person or both? Jenny?
But let's not use words like bad person. Is he a trauma survivor that caused him to have a shattering who his personality is so distorted?
Yes, that he's a bad person.
That he's a bad person.
Okay, yes, I'll grant you that.
Well, Tawny knew him when she was in her 20s, so he became more broken.
Right, and he was fine.
And he was fine.
Yeah, that's her point. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you'll get reports of that throughout, right?
So there's a real possibility of restoring him back to that guy that you knew, Tawny, 20 years ago.
But maybe
that's what you would hope. But I think now what's happened.
Hang on, what Tawny, what are you saying?
Well, Drew, I think you're absolutely right, because if that was the case, that he was a blanket sexual harassment guy.
A predator.
Thank you. My SAT scores weren't that high. I'm joking. But,
don't talk about yourself like that, Tawny.
See, here we go. Women Come again. On. Women.
Come
I'm
on.
Just self-deprecating, and I'm fine with that. But it doesn't make any sense that he didn't do that to me, except for the only thing that makes sense is he really wanted to date me.
But that's okay. It's not a predator. It's fine. He was a human being, had attractions.
But
he
here's
to have
the
a
thing. Has he been so dehumanized now that it's making it impossible for him? Because there is a media storm about it.
Yeah.
It's almost like he's not a human being anymore.
And to be fair, and Jenny, maybe you'll bear me up on this. I mean, there's a real suicide risk here, too.
Yeah.
This is a human being. Human being. He has bad sex addiction. He has some trauma stuff that made this horrible self-esteem issue and this need for power. And he does exploit women with power and control and is inexcusable. Mm-hmm. He should take the consequences for that. But could he be treated? Jenny.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's a but. I think it's an and.
Yes.
And I think he could, I think he could be treated. Yeah. I don't know that his reputation and his career can be treated or rehabilitated. But that's where the butt comes in. I think what's important is that he get some sort of treatment so that he can restore himself to the person that he once was. I mean, chances are, like, he probably doesn't feel real great about himself. At some point in the day, there has to be some little glimmer of humanity in there that says what he's doing is not the right thing. And it will be challenging for any of us to ever know whether or not any treatment he goes through is actually an authentic sort of push to get better.
That's what I'm talking about.
Do you treat much sex addicts now, Jenny?
I don't. I mean, in the past year, I have had maybe one person who has.
But I've had
identified
a couple. But
a sex addict.
But aren't you noticing more and more? It's not the sexually acting out as much as the porn and the internet and
sex addiction.
No, but that's who's coming into treatment. This Harvey Weinstein is a different animal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is like you said, Bill Clinton, Tiger Woods.
This is old school predatory
behavior. And you know, I just think he's been really dehumanized by media, which is back to your Aztec thing. Right.
Back to my Aztec thing.
The sacrificial,
oh, we have to sacrifice somebody.
Sacrifice
yeah.
him. And, yeah. and it's his blood will cleanse Hollywood.
Yeah.
Right, that's really a narrative that's yeah. going on, and you know, and yeah. I like, and I notice like when women speak up and say this isn't going to change anything, they get attacked, right? Mm-hmm. Because Hollywood wants to believe, like Las Vegas wants to believe, it's the safest place in the world. It's Las Vegas. Hollywood is the greatest place in the world. Your dreams can come true. Those dreams, more often than not, involve people being taken advantage of, abused by power. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Hollywood Boulevard is a pretty sad street.
Mm. Intern rooms are pretty sad places.
Yeah. And so.
Meaning what? Powerless?
Well, I mean, like, my husband was an intern, and he happened to work for a solid guy at a solid company, and they pay crap. They don't pay when they're interning, and they put a ton of the workload on the interns. I mean, internship in Hollywood is like the Holy Grail, and it is the biggest shit job that there is.
No, there's a shittier job. There's a shittier job. Nowadays, rehabs that are trying to cut corners are having mostly students that are unpaid do groups, document, and do one-on-ones, and document and bill insurance with students doing it.
They can't bill insurance.
Yeah, they can because there's a supervisor who signs off on them.
Oh.
Isn't that
so
crazy?
I have an intern. That's bananas. I have an intern, and I'm having her do some groups, and I'm having her do some one-on-one and some resource brokering, but it's only for our like patients who can't otherwise afford treatment.
That's where it
and
should
be. It's all free, and also I don't bill. Like I've built the role so that nobody in my position can bill because it's ridiculous. People aren't going to come see me if they – get billed for that.
Mm. Yeah. Well,
Donnie.
Instagrammed and brought up something that hasn't been in the conversation. This person said, I grew up in Pennsylvania. Everyone on here, and you know, you should ask who should be asking for help is Jerry Sandusky. Mm. This person says it's way too late. He's done.
Right. There's a certain point at which if you don't get treatment, just like with heroin addiction, you die or you have such severe consequences that there's no turning back.
But the Penn State thing is another interesting thing. Penn State football has moved on. They took Joe's statue down. They're number one in the country. Everybody's moved on. We love this 3, 4, 5 days of intense 24-hour talking followed up by real intellectual conversations for another week and then move on. That's the American phenomenon of these things. And we need to stop and look at Vegas and look at Harvey Weinstein and look at Penn State and really change.
Now, and Bob, let me ask you a question. Do you think that social media helps that or inflames that?
I'm going to argue it makes everything worse on twofold, threefold.
One
is it creates the mob that accelerates whatever the feeling is on a primitive level. The mob then needs some sort of
blood.
So there's some sort of bloodlust that gets acted out on. There's a catharsis afterward that is filled with guilt that needs some sort of resurrection. And I think the resurrection is the moving on. I think we have a resurrection fantasy of some type that we can have a catharsis followed by a resurrection of something better.
It's so funny you brought up Penn State. God, ever since this subject of Hollywood's come up, that's never even crossed my mind.
Me neither.
This just happened 2 years ago.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Hometown. I was 15. I did that. Yeah. That's what's, you know, talking about the power, if it's bad or not. None of us ever mentioned Jerry Sandusky.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Yeah, and it's the speed, the social media, the speed with which we move on to the next thing. It's just
Penn State's number one, you know.
Exactly. Ohio, Penn State?
Penn State. Well, look it up.
Dodgers are playing.
I know, the Dodgers are on in a little while. All right, you guys.
Oh, I shouldn't have brought the Dodgers. You were dismissed. Everybody dismissed.
I got to get home for the Dodger game. I got an hour drive. Go
wow.
Dodgers.
Wow, you're pretty transparent there, Bob.
We were supposed to start at 2:30.
All right, fair enough. Fair enough. I reminded him. I want to give you guys last crack at the power issue and how, because this one, this, for me, this Weinstein story I mean, a lot of the other ones have been about addiction and whatnot, but this one really was about power more vividly than any of the other ones. Did we learn anything? Is there something specific we can do in response to this? Who wants to start? Tani.
It's so difficult. I think just like the story that I told Susan, 20 years ago happened to me. I wasn't old enough, wise enough. I was too scared to tell anybody.
Well, so no, Tani. So my simple, you've already brought up the answer. I think about it. Keep hold on to your power, women. And, right. And if you see something, say something. Right. Okay. So just like any other crime. And then I would, and my third chapter to that would be to add on something Jenny said, which is, this is what change looks like. We're in it.
Yes, we're in it.
Is that about right?
I think that is absolutely fair. And Jenny, you're right. We are in it.
Yeah, this is it.
Yeah.
You think this is really the change? This case is going to
process of change.
The process.
No, I think this is transition. Yeah. This is a long, painful transition filled with a million tiny explosions of change. Yeah. And I think if we delude ourselves into thinking that one big incident will be the inciting factor to create this institutional systemic change, we're never going to get what we need to do, because it's a lie. That's not how systemic change works. We keep working at it. We keep talking about it. We keep identifying where power and privilege are failing people and where they're serving people. And then it keeps getting dismantled. We were talking about it a long time ago, and now we are.
Yeah, I think that's good. I think that's the right way to summarize it. Anything else, producer?
No, they're just, they're talking about Harvey being in intensive therapy to try to save his career. And
If that's why he's there, as Jenny said, the authenticity of his participation will be called into question.
But why in Europe?
I heard he went to Meadows, Jenny. I don't know if you heard. I heard he went to.
Oh no, I didn't
Meadows
know.
Is a good program.
Be a good place for him.
Yeah, it's a perfect
it's a great
place
program.
For him. Yeah, that's when I heard that. I went, okay. Well,
yeah, I shouldn't watch entertainment tonight. Originally, from my information.
Originally they said UK, and then I heard Meadows, and then I heard when they weren't clear. And then he was going to go to court and not to treatment. If he goes to treatment, there's a possibility of recovery. That's all.
Always a possibility. Yeah.
All right, ladies, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it. Thank you, everybody on Facebook, and thank you all for listening.
So take a knee, everybody, and we'll see you next time.
All right, it is fall and your immune system is about to get tested, everybody. Not only does the changing weather mark the start of cold and flu season, it's also back to school time when kids become walking petri dishes. While catching something may be inevitable, there is no excuse for letting yourself get dehydrated in the process. So when you're wiped out with cold or flu, the first piece of advice always to drink plenty of fluids, but we seem to forget that. Now, once you've started feeling dehydrated, it's already too late for water or sports drinks. Rapid rehydration requires the proper balance of sodium, glucose, and water, and nothing gives this like Hydralyte. Hydralyte's formulation is based on established, proven science, and it is the simply best rehydration product I've found in this country. Hydralyte comes in great flavors, orange, berry, lemonade, and it's available in a pre-mixed drink, a powder, or what I prefer, those effervescence tablets. You just drop in a glass of water or a bottle of water, off you go. It's like your own portable IV, but you can do it enterally. Compared to sports drinks, Hydralyte delivers up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugar. Hydralyte solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-use, easy-to-follow instructions. You can find Hydralyte at Rite Aid or online at Amazon.com. And for a limited time, our listeners can save 30% on Hydralyte. Just click the banner on our site, drdrew.com, 30% off. Great deal. Do it.
Remember, you can find all these podcasts at drdrew.com. The Dr. Drew podcast, the This Life podcast, and the Adam and Drew podcast, which is available 5 days a week. Find them all on iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Subscribe and get it first. And if you're really happy, click on the Amazon banner at drdrew.com to help support the show. We'll thank you for it. If you join the email list via drdrew.com/contact, we'll send you a weekly infusion newsletter with Dr. Drew's news. We're so grateful when you get in touch. We read all your emails and we'll bring you the subject matter you want to hear about.
You live.